Hello and welcome to Resource Report, where we share with you important information about local nonprofits and resource organizations that support the community we share, produced by Pathways to Agency.
I am your host, Rainmaker. Today, I have the pleasure of bringing you Triceratops Tech, who have been working with so many wonderful organizations in town, some of whom have also been featured on our show. Let's meet Executive Director Griff Masters and Program Manager Azure Sensabaugh. Here they are.
I am here at Chaos Radio Station with Griff Masters and Azure Sensabaugh of Triceratops Tech. How are you guys doing?
We're good. We're excited.
Okay. Can you introduce yourselves, your positions, and how did you come to be here at Triceratops Tech?
I'm here because I graduated in 2023 and my school does an internship program where basically if you can find a nonprofit that you want to do an internship at, they will pay you to go work there for a few months after you graduate. So I came and I decided to do my internship in 2023 at Triceratops Tech. And then it turned into a part-time job, and then now it's my full-time job. So that's how I got here.
That's awesome.
And I'm Griff Masters. I'm the executive director and founder of Triceratops Tech. So high points are I used to work in the tech industry, and I used to work in the nonprofit industry, and I saw a lot of gaps in each of them that seemed like they really had a need for some of the expertise in the other one. And so me and some friends of mine just started trying to make some connections to fill some of those gaps. And that was about 7 years ago.
That's awesome. Explain to us what Triceratops Tech is, what y'all do. And I'm really curious how y'all got the name Triceratops Tech. Like, I have to know that.
Yeah, we can start there. When we first started taking on projects, we just had a few very kind of systems thinking people. And so we didn't really have a great need to incorporate or form a 501c3 nonprofit, but it just seemed like kind of an interesting system to learn about if we were going to be working with nonprofits. And so in filling out all the paperwork, we found that we needed to name the organization to do that. And so my son was 5 at the time, and that was his favorite type of donut.
And when we asked him what did he wish he'd name the company, he said Triceratops.
I love that story. So Triceratops Tech, y'all help people with technology.
That's right. Yeah. So when I was in the software field, a friend of mine worked at Google. This was in like 2015 or so, when they had a really, really strong program for supporting employees doing charity projects and working with charities and good causes. And he told us this story one time about how the team that he was working on, they had a day where they went and picked up litter in Merrimore Park. And, you know, talking about this project, it's great. I'm really glad that they did it. It's a good cause. But, you know, we were just thinking, this is a team of some of the best software developers in the world. Like, I feel like we can get some more out of them than that. And with my background working with some nonprofits around the Olympia area, you know, the kinds of problems that I saw them dealing with were they're very real and very valid problems, but technology-wise, they're not that complicated, you know? And so it just seemed like there was a real easy wins to make connecting those two together. You know, people who work in the technology field who want to do something good and help make a difference, and organizations out there with great missions trying to make the world better, getting stuck behind technology problems that we could sort out pretty quickly ourselves.
That's awesome. Y'all saw an obvious need and a simple way to fix it. That's great. And so the services that y'all offer, can you talk about those?
Yeah, we're all day long.
Let's go for it.
We're a pretty broad sort of gap-filling, capacity-building organization. We have some specialties that we've built up over time, some things that we do over and over again, but our favorite organizations to work with and the ones that we find are really the most underserved are small organizations and newer organizations that really don't have
the language or the context to go and seek help from other more established organizations. You know, they have problems that they don't really understand what they are a lot of the time. They just are stuck and they don't really understand why, and it's really hampering their operations. And so we'll work with them to, even if they're not aware of how to articulate the problem that they're having, we'll work with them to figure out what their needs are, if it's some repairs that they need done to their website or some maintenance, or they need to change a tool that they're using for tracking their data, or the computers that they use for their operations, for their employees, for their volunteers. We'll work with them to figure out what their problem is. And then most of the time, we can either give them some instructions that they can sort them out themselves, or we can do some work to do some repairs and then hand it back off to them. Occasionally, we'll even refer people out to, a broader network of technology companies and other engineers and people that we know that can take on bigger, more specific issues. But we really try to target that low-hanging fruit where we can get quick wins to get people back up and running more effectively and get them using tools that they're able to own and maintain themselves, so that they're not really stuck paying for somebody to manage their services on a subscription basis for years and years.
That sounds like a great overview. Can we, let's expand on that a little bit. Like, you have listed on your website application development, IT support, data services, staff training, web development, CRM support, and vendor management. Can you share a little more deeply about those, please?
Yeah, so like Grip was saying, we kind of just come in to help an organization with whatever they're stuck on. So it's very random and fun to learn a lot of new things all the time. I would say the biggest three that we help with are websites, IT support, and data support. So if I was going to pick one to expand out, it would be data. Nonprofits have to manage a lot of data, a lot of types of data. So you have to keep track of who your supporters are, who's donating to you, who's showing up to your events, who is responding to your calls for support and volunteering. You have to keep track of the people you're trying to help and the people you're trying to serve to make sure your programs are working the way you think they are. And maybe because you also have to report to your funders about whether you are, whether your goals are being met with your programs. And so we love getting to come in and help them organize how they analyze their data, how they interact with it every day, how they enter their data. Like if they work with a lot of people who need case management, how they might handle their case management. So that's one example of an area where we enjoy working a lot to help people organize their program data and their supporter data.
That's awesome. In the matter of IT support, what are some good examples that y'all have of that?
Sometimes it's pretty straightforward stuff, like I really need to get my email working on my phone, or I really need to set up for the first time having staff organizational accounts instead of everyone doing things on their personal account. Sometimes it looks like troubleshooting someone's internet. You need functioning internet to be able to run your programs. You need functioning computers to be able to run your programs every day. Helping people troubleshoot their devices and their online accounts and their apps. That, I think, is the bulk of the IT work that we do.
Yeah, one of the most common questions that we work with people on is what to do when somebody leaves. If there's
most organizations have one person who just kind of unofficially manages all their technology stuff, and we've seen it be any different role in an organization. It's sometimes somebody on the board or an operations manager or just whoever the youngest person is on staff ends up just kind of doing that on top of whatever their job actually is. And then when this person leaves, they have accounts set up all over the place. They have files on their computer that are critical to the organization running. They have that one spreadsheet that's got all the formulas in it that you need to keep running. And it can be really, really hugely impactful. I mean, we've seen organizations that have ceased operations over not being able to recover from something like that.
And so one thing that we'll work with people on a lot is how to prevent big problems from that, how to recover from it. Sometimes if there's a lot of chaos and uncertainty, then we've had projects where we start with just bringing a bank statement the first time, and we'll start with what you're paying for and make a list of the accounts that you're paying for, and just go from there, start recovering things and getting them into a place where you're back in control of them.
That sounds, wow, that is impactful, you know, and I think that a lot of people have peace of mind hearing that they have a problem solver there now for that. That's awesome. I'm curious about application development. So that sounds like a real specialty kind of thing. Are you like developing special applications unique for organizations? Is that what I'm reading into that?
We do that. We haven't done that before. And it is a service that we offer. We kind of joke about how we spend most of our time explaining to people why they don't want to build their own app, why they don't want custom code in their solution. But that's actually what my background is in software development before I started doing this. And honestly, when we were first toying with the idea, what I pictured was building custom software, because that's what I knew the most about. Once we got in and started working more closely with organizations and seeing what problems they actually faced, we started getting a lot more tactical about the kind of changes that we were making, learning how to effectively use and configure the tools that they had in place so that they can continue to own them in the long term, so that if an issue comes up, they have an avenue to find support, and it's not just, well, this is a custom piece of software that you built, so if it breaks, then go learn to code so you can figure out what's wrong. Okay. We do that, though. There have been some cases that come up. You know, we have a very high bar for that, because owning custom code is pretty onerous. But there have been cases where we worked with a group and found that now that's the right solution. We did just recently, we built a custom little app for an organization doing some interview transcription to build some automation for that. They were doing a lot of just writing out transcripts by hand. And so we were able to build a little standalone app that doesn't need any other infrastructure support from anything else. It can just run on its own. So it's very simple. And we have a good relationship with them to help maintain that. And that really touches on the other side of our organization, which is our educational piece, because that's where we really like to get students involved and custom code development, anything that has to do with software development, because that's a place where we have a really thriving volunteer network that's grown just by leaps and bounds in the last couple of years. And it includes a lot of students and people who are making a career change or interested in making a career change, as well as a lot of people who are really established in their fields. So we can set up a mentorship with them. We can spin up projects that we don't even do anything with ourselves that are entirely run by volunteers. And it lets them get some experience on their resume that is actual production code out there running in the world on the internet that you can go and see, which is really valuable for job hunting, in addition to the whatever training and certifications they might already have.
That sounds exciting. We'll come back to that in a second. I'm curious more about I'm still curious about the application development stuff. You said it could be onerous. Can you explain what the pros and cons are of having that?
I think basically the con is that if something breaks and you don't have anyone on your staff who knows how to code, it now becomes a huge problem.
Okay.
Whereas if you're using an app that's really popular, like maybe you use a CRM that a lot of other organizations use, if you start Googling your question when something breaks, you can probably figure out how to fix it yourself. But if you have a custom app, which we usually don't recommend, it becomes very expensive to try and fix it and try to find someone who knows how to code who can help you fix it. So that's basically the main con. The pro is that if you have something really, really specific that you're trying to do, sometimes making an app can save you a lot of time on that. So that's another big goal of ours, not only to help the nonprofits serve people better, but their actual staff can save time. Pro, it can help you with very specific tasks. Con, it's very, very difficult to troubleshoot and fix.
Yeah, and that leads to my next question, actually. I don't know what CRM support is. What is CRM?
Basically, the CRM is a database of all the people who interact with your organization and what they're doing. So if you have a CRM, you can log into it and you can see who are all the people who have subscribed to my newsletter? Who are all the people who have volunteered with me recently? Who are all the people that, if you're a food bank, we've distributed food to? That might be one thing we'll track with a CRM. And it gives you a way to track them all in one place instead of having a lot of separate spreadsheets, like, oh, I'll track this in this spreadsheet, this here and this there. It's all in one place. So a lot of people use it for donor management. A lot of people use it for program management. Just help you keep track of everyone interacting with your organization.
That sounds kind of like the other service, vendor management. Is that different?
I think it totally comes up there. Griff might speak to this more. He loves doing it. But basically, at some point in the history of your organization, someone made a decision. We're going to buy this product. We're going to buy this app. It's going to solve all our problems. It's probably what the sales team told them. And then later down the line, they realized, like, oh, this product is not quite what I expected. Or we're having a lot of trouble transitioning or launching it or actually getting to use it. And so vendor management basically looks like us coming in and getting to say the right techie words to that app or the sales representative or the customer service representative and advocate for the nonprofit and say, no, you need to help them with this. You need to do what you promised them you would do. And Griff loves getting to do that.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite things to do because it's really it can be the biggest bang for our buck, really, for all the services that we offer. Because on one side, a lot of people, if they're not really knowledgeable about the tools that they're using, people get into a headspace where they just kind of expect that, well, my boss bought this thing and now there's another tool that we have here. And it doesn't really seem to, I don't really understand what it does, but it's another thing that I have to do to like put some data into this now. And that's broken. Like, you don't have to put up with that. If tools aren't making your job easier, then something's wrong. You know, it's either misconfigured or maybe it's not quite the right fit. And you don't have to give up on it. Really, a lot of the time, there are contracts in place that will get you everything that you need, but it's just a matter of really articulating to the vendor what it is that's not lining up. And there's a separate language that they all speak. And so if you can just say the right set of words to them, it unlocks the dialogue tree to make everything work. And we've had projects where we have just really just one email thread and a whole project will just go away because they'll just fix it. So that's vendor management is a term that we kind of came up with to cover that because it was coming up so often we needed to call it something.
Okay. That makes sense. And staff training is like you're helping train different staff members with different organizations on how to use their technology?
That's right. Bradley, for office skills and some basic computer training and more advanced things, we've had some cases where an organization will have some technology in place and will have not really worked with it before, but we've worked in that space. You know, there's trends among all of these. And so there have been some sessions where we have to go learn it ourselves and then we put together a training for them. You know, even if the tools are all working perfectly, it's easy to forget about that getting up to speed time and that handoff can be kind of broken. So we've done some on specific tools. And then we also do a lot of best practices for managing your passwords, collaborating on sharing documents with each other. Anytime we change something, you know, there's change or the change management that goes into that is making sure that everybody can use it well so that it's more effective, so it's saving time.
That sounds good. Wow. Yeah. And then are these services only for nonprofits or do you also work with individuals, community members?
The services we've been talking about are mostly for nonprofits, but we do have programs where we work with individuals. On the educational side of our organization, we have technology training for the public. So, for example, we might go to the library and hold a computer basics class or a cybersecurity basics class for people who want basic technology skills. And we also have
drop-in technology support. So at a few locations around town, we set up for an hour in the common room and people can come just get help with whatever is not working with their computer and we'll help them one-on-one. We love getting to do that as well. We also do more advanced tech education sometimes. We'll do coding clubs for youth, for example, or like Griff was saying, another way we can incorporate education into our programs is by allowing emerging technology professionals to come shadow our work as we do work with nonprofits. So they can come see what does it actually look like doing hands-on technology work, which is sometimes hard to get practice with. So we can do those services for individuals, but I think mainly for individuals, the main thing we can offer is educational services and also devices sometimes. So we have this network of people who will donate computers or phones and also organizations. And we try to incorporate that into our educational programs whenever we can, whenever we have enough, that the people can come to a computer class. And then when they leave, they have their own computer that they actually have practiced and know how to use. So for individuals, we have education programs and devices sometimes in Modia.
So is that referring to the community projects that you have listed on your website?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would call that one of our community projects.
Okay. Yeah. So you had done, like I saw you were doing like a workshop or a training or something at the library recently downtown.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, we had a cybersecurity training at the library. And we have a series of a curriculum that we really like for basic technology skills that includes, it starts with a really basic, just how to use your computer, what a file is, and how to open things and get to the internet. And then there's some components that build on that for using email and surfing the internet safely on video conferencing. And we did one on cybersecurity that had a really positive turnout for, and we're hoping to do some more of those at the library coming up soon.
Awesome. And do y'all set up those workshops at different locations? Do you go to schools?
Yeah, well, I'm excited to answer the first one because we have done a couple trainings before at the library, and we were a little bit... not stuck there because we love working with the library, but there were very few places that we could hold classes because we needed to use their devices and their internet. But we're so thrilled to be a part of that Inspire Olympia program this year for the first year. That's the 0.5% or 1% little municipal sales tax a couple years ago that we passed goes to support a lot of local nonprofits and good causes. And we were fortunate to be one of those. And so we were able to use some of that funding to get ourselves a mobile computer lab set up. So we have 20 laptops and Wi-Fi hotspots now. So we are completely set loose. We can hold events and trainings anywhere that we want now, and with those phone signal.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's really exciting for us.
It's so exciting. Yeah, we are so excited to keep partnering with even more organizations this year. The types of groups that usually have benefited so far with basic digital skills training are groups like seniors, immigrants, refugees, formerly incarcerated people, formerly homeless people. But people of all walks in life need like basic digital skills. You need technology skills to do just about everything these days. So yes, we are so excited. Any location that has people who they think would benefit from some technology classes, we would love to work with and hold a class there.
Are y'all going to schools?
Yes, Griff was part of a coding program in a Tumwater school, I believe, Black Hills High School. So we've done a little bit of coding education and technology education. Griff and one of our former board members launched that coding class at that school. We also have been chatting with Boys and Girls Club branches a little bit to have a club there because our funding is growing and our program is growing and we're going to keep expanding and offering. We've also worked with a group in Tacoma that does youth projects. So we're going to go teach a little STEM workshop there. Yeah, so those are some places where you've held youth activity. Less in schools recently, but we had worked in a school before.
Yeah, we did. We did develop the, we're a part of the launch of that Black Hills High School coding class. And we have a lot of programs that are
in various stages of spinning up with, we're talking to some Olympia School District schools. We're a part of the program at New Market Academy for their game development program. We're an affiliate of Girls Who Code, which we were really surprised to find that there wasn't one here already. We started Googling to see who to connect with to start up their program. They're a very well-established program that does coding classes and curriculum, not just for girls, but they try to encourage more women to join the software field. And we found there weren't any between, I think, like Centralia and Federal Way. There wasn't one around here. So we're a Girls Who Code affiliate now, and that's part of the program that we're talking to different schools and organizations about.
That's awesome. I've actually never heard of that. What is that?
It's another nonprofit that we're partnered with. That their whole program is centered around coding education, and their original mission they launched to try to encourage more women in STEM fields. They're connected to there's a famous Grace Hopper conference, an organization with a similar mission. They do encourage really everybody to join STEM fields and learn to code and try to get more people just broadly to have a knowledge of how software works. So they have some really good tools and curricula that we have access to through them that we can build on to help improve our classes.
That's awesome. And how do people reach out to set up for receiving a service or joining a program?
It depends on which program. If someone is listening and they work at a school or they work with youth and they want to chat about maybe bringing a club to their program, they should send us an email and we can chat instead of a meeting. That's the first step for a lot of our programs, I think, is that we would just want to meet and talk about it. If you work in a nonprofit and you think you might need a little technology support, we'd love to meet with you and chat. If you are interested in digital skills training or you're interested in bringing digital skills training to the people you serve, we would love to email with you and set up a meeting to talk about what that might look like, what topics might be best, what formats of class might be best for your communities. So yeah, there's both options on our website if they want to set up a meeting or they just want to shoot us an email and we can learn more about what they are looking for.
Okay.
And anything that we do in the public, too, is on our social media, too. Any, you know, individuals, if you follow our social media, any classes or anything that we have, all those opportunities are on Facebook.
Okay. Y'all are just on Facebook?
We're on Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky. We've got a lot of opinions about a lot of social media platforms, but they are the default for how the word gets out for a lot of things. So we try to keep them updated.
So y'all are located in the Olympia, but what areas do you cover? Where do you go?
We work with organizations all across the country.
What? Not just Washington. I was expecting we'll go all the way out as far as maybe Seattle, but like, are you serious? The whole country?
Oh yeah, we work with places in Virginia, New York. There's a group we worked with for quite a while down in Northern California. Because so much of the work they do is online, we can work remotely pretty easily.
That makes sense.
Most of the places that we work with are local. We do like to build up relationships. We really like to get into a position where we just get to know an organization and we get to the point eventually where they start to call us about little things that we can sort out really quickly. So then we can have a short conversation early on so that a big project isn't needed later on. It's a world tipping point when they call us before they make the big software purchase instead of calling us after to see how do we get it to actually work.
It sounds very preemptive and helpful. Yeah. So what services and programs are free? Do you have sliding scale? What are some costs? Can you go over those details, please?
Everything we do is sliding scale. for our services for nonprofits. And our goal is to make them as cheap as we possibly can. So those are subsidized by grants. They're subsidized by donations. Sometimes we're able to be flexible and actually help an organization get a grant that will go to a website project if we can explain it in terms of the impact of their organization and their programs. So yes, everything is sliding scale, and we try to do things for free when we can. Our services for the public are always free. If someone wants to show up to one of our classes, those are always free. Those are paid for by our funders. And so, all of our services for nonprofits are sliding scale, and we're going to try to keep it as low as we can.
Cool. Like, what's the range?
Totally depends on what kind of project it is. So we could take websites as one example. Basically, people Google, how can I make a website for free? WordPress is really, really popular. Like something like half of the websites on the internet are built on WordPress. And it's really old and it's open source. It's really difficult. It's really difficult and convoluted. And it's, its quality has changed over the years in terms of the plugins and the tools that are available. And yet a lot of people use it and they have it. And it's a huge hassle to move off of it. So they might come to us and say, we don't know what's going on, but we don't know how to do X on our website. We don't know how to change this on the page. We don't know how to make sure we're not having a security issue. We're not having a hack or anyone able to access our website data. And so there's always an element of going in and just having to troubleshoot and investigate a little bit. So those are usually smaller projects in the realm of like $100 to $500, I think, which is just we go in. We kind of do an audit of how does your website look behind the scenes? Can we fix any common problems like right here, right now, and then give it back to you in a better state with a little training? If they want to do an entire website redesign, that's quite a large project that could take many months of meetings and going back and forth and deciding on your vision and who you want the audience to be and what information you want them to get from your website. So those can range from like 1,000 to 10,000. It's quite a huge project. But again, we love getting that subsidized by grants or getting to keep it as cheap as we can. Or it's maybe they just have like a really specific thing where they want someone to just make small updates to their website for them recurringly. So that's pretty cheap. That's like $100 a month, 100 to 500, depending on how often you need to update things. So it really, even in that one little area of our services, it really varies widely on what's going on. And but yeah, there can be huge projects in the website area.
You know, a lot of the groups that we work with, the place they're starting out at is just something's not really working right. They have some need and it's not really specifically a technology need. And we help articulate that. And we get to the end of that first stage, and the goal really is to have a couple simple steps to say, oh, all you really need is to configure this thing, or you need to move off of this tool onto another tool.
Right on, right on. Have y'all dealt with viruses before, and how does that go?
In the time I've been working here, I don't think we've helped someone who has actively had a malware or an attack, but we have absolutely advised and helped people who are very worried about it and helped with preventative stuff like that. We've also had people come to our classes who are saying, I'm here in this cybersecurity class because I got scammed and I want to know how can I avoid being scammed. That's another theme related to AI, is it's enhancing how credible sound in a scam can be in the new AI era.
It's so scary, man.
It's very scary.
Yeah, but it's so much harder.
It's much stronger. So, I don't know if your answer is different. In the time I've worked, we haven't helped someone who actively has like malware, but we have helped people prevent that and work on that.
Yeah, data security is a big part of data security has really been growing a lot on our landscape, the place that we work, especially with some of the organizations that we work with, just realized in the changing political climates lately that they don't really know what controls they have over their data, who's storing it, and if they were to get some kind of a notice that they need to hand over some of their data, what are their what how would they even do that, for one? And then what would their options be for how to work with that? And of course, we can't give any kind of legal advice, but it is surprising how much it can sneak up on you to just collect data and not realize where you're storing it or how until you need it to either you generate a report or just answer some questions about what your organization is doing, and then you realize that you don't know how to find out. So in terms of malware, really that's the place that comes up a lot is trying to prevent issues with your data. And the best, most general advice is to make it somebody else's problem. Google and Microsoft cloud products are HIPAA compliant. Their security is better than anything that you do yourself. You have to, again, use them right, and you know, do your research or let us help you do your research to use it correctly. But it's true, we haven't really encountered anything, any projects dealing with malware, which is great. And a lot of that is because of the shift from a lot of people tending towards saving their data on servers that are on site that used to be, that used to feel like the safest option. And it's really not now. It's one of the least safe options. As more and more people go to the cloud and use these other services, there are trade-offs with everything, but broadly it makes the security and the malware not as much their own problem, so they don't have to worry about it as much.
Yeah. What are some malware like antivirus programs and stuff like that y'all would recommend is like the best?
Yeah, absolutely. So on Windows has Windows Defender built into it. It's good and it's free and it's built in. The only way you can really run into a big problem with that is if you try to install another malware program over the top of it, and then they do fight a little bit. So, you know, it's kind of a case of trying to do too much good, and it circles back around. So, use a Windows Defender effectively, is about the best thing that you can do on Windows. If you use a Mac, then there's an open source program called Malwarebytes that's free and open source. Macs are not less susceptible to viruses, but there are fewer viruses that are targeted towards them, and so it's a little safer there. But if you do want some extra protection, Malwarebytes is a good product. And if you use Linux, which is a great product, I use Linux, then you don't really have to worry about it.
I think we are less focused on getting someone to purchase a product and more focused on education. I, at the cybersecurity class, one of our fabulous cybersecurity volunteers ran that class. Her name is Quim. And I really liked what she said during that, which is the easiest way to break in is through the front door. It's to get the key, your password, and to come through the front door. So a lot of scams are very focused on getting a password, not necessarily on like actually breaching and breaking into your systems. So it's also about, what does a phishing email look like? How can you make sure you only enter your password in a very secure place? How can you make sure you store your passwords in a secure place? How can you make sure you have secure passwords that are long and complicated and difficult for an algorithm to guess? So if we were going to help someone try to avoid getting a virus, we'd probably be less focused on buying something, although they are useful, wonderful products, and more on how can you protect your passwords? That's really important.
Yeah, thank you for saying that. Yeah, it sounds like a lot of them might come through emails.
That is totally a section in our cybersecurity class, yes. What is a warning sign if you're reading an email that should raise your alarms? Mm-hmm. Some of the ones they talk about in that class are, if there's anything really urgent sounding in the email, like if they're saying, you need to reply to me right now, you need to reply to me in 3 hours or by the end of the day, or else X will happen. You'll lose a lot of money. Your account will be deleted, something like that. That should already raise your alarm bells if they're trying to get you to act without thinking. There are other indicators like typos. If there's bad grammar, if the logo looks a little bit off, if they're trying to impersonate a certain account and they're trying to get you to log into it, if the logo, it looks blurry. What else am I missing? In an email,
thing that has stuck out at me sometimes that has made me side eye is it's in the two. There's a bunch of different emails that look like my email and have these long, weird strings attached.
Totally.
Lawboard strings are a very big red flag in our email. If they, if you look at who it's from and the domain, the address doesn't match who it says it is, that's a dead giveaway. But really any kind of gibber strings is an indication of something weird.
That's a great point. You want to check the to section, like you said. You also want to check the from section. Mm-hmm. You also want to look at what it's asking you to do. There are certain giveaways. Like we even had one of our volunteers, someone sent her a spam email and it said, "Hey, this is Griff." They got that from our website, I assume. "Hey, this is Griff. I need you to buy me some gift cards. Get back to me soon." That's suspicious. That's a classic one. Is, "I need you to buy me these gift cards." And you might reply, be like, "Why does it have to be gift cards?" And they're like, "No, you don't question me. I'm your boss." Also, there are certain types of things that should be a red flag. Clicking on links also. If you're not expecting someone to send you an attachment or a link, you should just be pretty wary of them and cautious of them. Doesn't mean all links are bad in your inbox. But yeah, the to section, who is it being sent to? And also the from section. So if you get an email that says, "This is Google, I need you to log in." But the from, if you actually click and expand and see who it was sent from, doesn't have the official Google domain on it, which means it's not info@google.com. It's anything else that contains the word Google. You can pretty safely discard that and not engage with it.
There is something I came across one time, and I was able to reach out to the customer service representative to check it. They pointed out to me to look at the letters carefully, that there's a difference in some of the characters, like they're formed differently, like in a different font or something, like the letter A, like where it might, you know, have that little hook over it versus not having a little hook over it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And so that was something that I've come across before, or like an O that's maybe shaped slightly different than like when the typical O.
Yeah. And I would say that's a great instinct that you had too, because one way that you can be extra super safe if there's something that you're a little bit concerned about or you want to double check is if a company sends something to you, you should be able to reach out to that company through another channel and verify it.
Yeah.
So if you go reach out to them, there's nothing that a scammer can do about that.
For example, in terms of keeping your data private from law enforcement or from anyone who might be interested in taking in data by your programs, there are open source ways to store your data, but they're very difficult to use. So that's always the spectrum we're helping people find for their organization. Are you able to keep your information safe if you use something like Google Drive or Microsoft SharePoint? Or are you so concerned that you really need to have the open source, basically the Linux equivalent of storing your data online? It's not the same answer for everyone, but we will help them do both, whatever is the best fit for them.
And so you mentioned different applications on like Linux and Apple. What are the types of devices and operating systems that y'all work with?
Well, we work with everything. We actually have a new partner who has a person out in the community who had this really cool side project. We get a lot of really interesting projects just from people bringing to us little things that they already know about. This guy takes laptop donations, and he has a version of Linux that he puts on them that's very, very easy to use, even easier to maintain than Windows. You don't have to do anything to it. It just works smoothly. He just has a little passion project where he gets these donated laptops, converts them to this Windows or this Linux distribution and hands them out into the community for free. We've been working with him to help build up that program a little bit to get a stable drop-off site at our office so that he doesn't have to set up individual meetings with people and things like that.
You want to name drop and give him a little free airtime?
Mike Kelly. You might want to interview him also. He's really cool. He is a given away over 1,000 laptops in Olympia. He's a really cool side project where people will bring in their laptops and he will turn them into something usable if they've kind of fallen out of date. And then he just gives them away. It's very cool.
Like for homeless people or people who like they need, their computer got stolen and, you know, they've got this, their student and they need this or whatever. That kind of.
I think she could talk more about the people where he helps, but I've heard him say there are people who just need a really basic laptop for school. They just need a really basic laptop for internet browsing. So like Griff said, what he does is he kind of strips away the old operating systems and puts this version of Linux on it. And if you've ever used a Chromebook, it kind of operates like a Chromebook where most of the things you do are inside of Google Chrome. You don't need to do a lot more. And that's, so for people who have pretty basic computer needs, it does everything that they need. On October 4th at the library, we're teaching a class on computer basics. And that one is going to be Windows class. So if you need to learn how to use Windows because you have a PC or because your work does, or just because you want to be more comfortable using Windows, you can come to that class. But we also have a Mac version of that class. Same with our cell phone classes. So we teach Android cell phone classes, also iPhone cell phone classes. Yeah, we work with both. We're pretty fluent in both. Although Griff is an engineer and he does love talking about Linux.
Yeah, a lot of the organizations that we work with, they have devices, they have laptops and phones maybe that belong to the organization. And that, again, that touches back on, you know, what happens when people leave or if, you know, this one computer has all of the files on it for the organization, how do we protect that? Because we're really generalists, you know, we work with whatever technology that an organization has, you know, whatever, we want to be in a position where we say, well, we use Windows, so you need to get rid of all your Macs and move to Windows before we can help you for anything. Like, we'll figure out whatever you have. We've worked with just about everything. I do love Linux myself. My primary laptop that I use has Linux on it. It's very exciting when we work with somebody who uses Linux, but we got to meet people where they're at, and it's not worth learning Linux in order to check your email if that's not what you're used to using. So we do a lot of work with Windows and a lot of training too. Windows 10 is in end of life right now. Next month, I think, is the switchover where you can only be on Windows 11 now. And it's a little contentious what that actually means. You can only be on Windows 11, but there's a lot of work to do for that to stay safe, to keep getting security updates and keep everything in working order.
Awesome. That's good to know. So how can people get involved? Like, are you hiring? Do you have, you know, you mentioned volunteers before, internships. What's going on?
For supporting the program, we're always looking for tech donations because we love to distribute them to people who come to our classes. We love to install them at homeless shelters or tiny home villages. We love to get them to people who know them. So that's one way that the community can be involved. If you have old tech lying around, you can drop it off at our office anytime. We always love meeting new volunteers. Also, volunteers can be ranging from new people to very established, very advanced tech professionals, depending on what kind of projects they want to work on. So if you want to be a volunteer, we would love to meet with you and chat about if you want to be more on the techy backend side, or if you want to do education programs, or if you want to help us with other administrative stuff that we have going on, that's very exciting for us too. We'd love to talk if you want to volunteer. If people want to bring, if they say, hey, I work at a vocational place and I want to bring some technology training, like I said earlier, we'd love to meet with you and hear more about that. We have. Definitely follow us on social media and subscribe so you can hear about our events and keep up to date. What else?
We're really, you know, we're really building everything all the time as we go. So it's all new all the time. One thing we can always use more of is we just need a couple extroverts around. We've got a lot of really good problem solvers and
technologists and building up, scaling the organization, making those connections and just getting the word out about what we're doing and how impactful can be.
How can people donate? What is the best method to donate, like funds or devices?
Devices are something that we can really make a lot of use of. Mike refurbishing laptops, it's amazing how much power you can get out of some really old devices. Windows is really a heavy program to run, and if you swap out to some light versions of Linux, you can really get a lot more life out of a lot of equipment.
If people want to donate devices, they can drop them off at our front desk anytime from 8:30 to 5. For other kinds of donations, our website donation page is a good place. If you want to give your donation to something specific, then we would love to chat with you. We'd love to meet with you, hear about what your goals are. If you want to help bring technology programs to Olympia and want to partner with us on building that, we would love to meet with you and help make Olympia a more technology accessible place.
Where are y'all located?
We in downtown Olympia. Our address is 400 Union Avenue Southeast, and our office is in Suite 200.
Thank you for that. And what's your phone number?
253-254-6548.
Awesome. Is there anything else you would like to share?
Griff has been building this organization since 2018 with his friends, and in the last 2 years, it has exploded and grown into something really, really, really cool. And I am just so excited to be a part of it and excited to make Olympia a more technologically accessible place. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess there's one thing that there's so many things that we have a training coming up for a cohort of nonprofits in the area that we've been working on compiling what's all of our most general advice for all these organizations. But I think that one of the things that we see the most is just that we see consistent value out of is just spending some time like acknowledging how complicated and how much work it is to manage the technology at these places. I've talked to some groups about how if you have like a program that has 20 trucks in it, then that's a big part of your program. And when you talk to people and think about making plans for the future, you take into account that like, we've got all these trucks, so we need to manage them. And we need to make sure that if we hire somebody, they have a driver's license, and we need a relationship with a mechanic if not one on staff ourselves. But people will get programs that rely on having dozens of computers and phones and networking equipment and all this really complex equipment, but they get sold a lot of the time this sales pitch that like, well, it just works and you just get it and then everything's fine and you don't have to deal with it. And you do have to deal with it. It's a lot of work to deal with, and it's really easy to get caught by surprise. And so we really try to just validate the person stuck doing all the IT work for their organization who wasn't trained for it and didn't really sign on for it, but it just kind of got dropped in their lap a lot of the time. It's a whole job. And we like to try to help with it a little bit.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank y'all so very much for coming. I appreciate y'all.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
What a wonderful resource Triceratops Tech is in our community and across the country. Once again, you can find them at 400 Union Avenue Southeast, Suite 200 in downtown Olympia, and call them at 253-254-6548 or go online to their website at www.triceratops-tech.com.
That's it for today's resource report produced by Pathways to Agency. At Pathways to Agency, we are driven by the belief that everyone should have the tools and support to achieve their goals and thrive in their communities. Our mission is to bridge the gaps in understanding, accessibility, and trust by connecting individuals to resources and sharing information and processes that can lead to personal and community growth. Resource Report offers information about existing and emerging nonprofits and resource organizations. Find out more at pathwaystoagency.org.
From there, you can follow the link to our podcast archive and listen to any episode anytime. And check out our YouTube channel.
Chaos Radio is not responsible or liable for any views or opinions expressed in the interviews conducted by Resource Report. Till next time, and thanks for listening.